really prepared the lesson because it's a lesson that I needed to hear. And not only that I need to hear it, but I found that I needed to spend some time thinking about these things and dwelling on these things. And so I pray that what I have to talk about this morning is also helpful for you in that we're all fellow human beings and share similar struggles. And really, today's lesson revolves around one central idea. And that idea is, it's not about you. It's not about you. And that phrase, you might think, well, that's a lesson that one should learn in many aspects of his life. You know, growing up as a child, you suddenly, at some point along the road, have to realize it's not about you. And, when you get into college or whatever, you have to learn it's not about you. When you get married, you have to learn it's not about you. And I think the tendency is that we continually come back to thinking mostly about ourselves. But when I say that we need to learn the lesson, it's not about you, for me, what that really means, I mean that in the context of these services, the church here, and what goes on in this place. And I think that can manifest itself in a lot of different ways. And I'll confess that many times I would sit in a Bible class. This is not a reflection on current Bible classes per se. But I'll sit in a Bible class and think to myself, you know, why are we focusing on such and such a topic? Or why do we spend so much time someplace? Like, that really isn't very helpful for me. I don't know if maybe you've ever thought that or felt that. Or maybe at times, you know, you're at services and you go and you leave services and you think to yourself or you comment to your spouse, really didn't get a whole lot of services today. That sermon was just not, I mean, I don't know what it was, but it just wasn't working for me. Just didn't really connect with that. Or the song services, they didn't lead the songs I like, or they led some songs I really don't like. I just don't like those songs, those ones that they sing. I don't know if you've ever, I think it's safe to say most of us have had moments like that, at least in some point. And, you know, and to the extent that the content of our services is not edifying and encouraging, that's a concern we need to address. But I think more often than not, that does not come from a real concern for the content of what we're doing. What it comes from is me thinking that it's all about me and me valuing my opinion more than other people's opinions, or that me thinking that I know what's best. And I think that maybe that's something that we all share in from time to time. I think that it can make itself manifest in other ways as well. Maybe not so much here, but I definitely have been in places, you know, where people are like, why don't I have a chance to get up and teach that class or preach that sermon? Here, if you have a mind to do something, you pretty much can do it. But that's not common everywhere, and I definitely have heard a lot of young men express frustration in not having those kinds of opportunities. Well, why can't that be me? And I can even admit to you that I had that happen. I was thinking about that. This happened to me. So when I went down to college, and I was attending a congregation for a few months, and they were going through teaching rotations and changing up teachers. And I really thought that I should have a shot to teach that class. I just thought, that's where I need to be. You know, a very wise teacher of all of 18 years of age. I thought that what this church really needs is me. I'm embarrassed to tell you. The gift of me. and then they brought in some other preacher. It was Tampa, so there's a lot of churches, and so they brought in some other guy and just like immediately plugged him in, and I'd been there months, and this really upset me because I was really zealous to participate, to be part of that. And I'm not saying though that kind of zeal is bad at all, but I'll confess to you now that my motives were completely wrong at that time. And I remember going and talking to an elder about that and explaining to him and saying, you know, I really, why aren't you using me? Why isn't it me? And I think that maybe we can all relate to those kinds of moments as well. And I think that this can also creep in, you know, when maybe we have the observation, you know, so-and-so doesn't really talk to me, right? So this person doesn't talk to me, or nobody ever talks to me, or I think that's another thing it's a habit that we can get into. And what we have to realize is that in that moment, I'm thinking mostly about me. Now, none of these things are things that we should never think. I mean, if you're having those thoughts, we need to address them for sure. But it does betray kind of a self-centered attitude. that I have. And it really betrays what my motive is in self-promotion of some sort. And so when I say, you know, that we've got to learn the lesson, it's not about me, it's really a lesson in understanding that our purpose here is really for the glory of God. Really, everything that we do needs to be for God and His glory. And if it's not, you're doing it wrong. You're just wrong. And I think that this is something that can be extremely difficult to really notice when we've fallen off the mark and we're doing things for the wrong reason. So this morning, it's a short lesson, really. Just going to look at a few passages, a few examples, really, of examples of people who missed the mark, who didn't understand that it was all about, and then people who really got it very well, that, hey, you know what, this isn't really about me, it's about something much greater. The first of those is in Numbers, the 12th chapter. This passage, actually, in our services has come up remarkably frequently. In examples, I think Murray actually used it in his lesson on regret and Moses. And this is the passage where Miriam and Aaron speak out against Moses. And it's where we learn that Moses was the meekest man, right, in the face of the earth. And God comes down and verbally defends Moses, right, in front of Miriam and Aaron. But I don't really want to focus on Moses today. I want to look at the other side of the coin and look at Aaron and Miriam. So let's look at just the first two verses of Numbers, the 12th chapter. It reads there that Miriam and Aaron spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman. And they said, "Has the Lord indeed spoken only through Moses? Has he not spoken through us also?" And the Lord heard it. And that's all we really need, I think, for right now. What is Miriam and Aaron really, what are they really saying in this moment? Hasn't God also spoken? Aren't we also prophets? I mean, I don't think we maybe don't have that recorded for us. We don't have an instance of that recorded, but apparently God did speak through Miriam and through Aaron. And they're saying, hey, aren't we also useful? Aren't we also part of the picture here? Right? Why is Moses being the one that is focused on? That was really their complaint. And, you know, that's actually, sometimes I think we come down pretty hard on people who make mistakes in the Bible. But that's actually that's not out of the question. I mean, I might have that thought and feeling as well. And really, they're just wanting to be used, wanting to be useful, wanting to be part of it. And I think we can all relate to that moment. Yet what they failed to realize in this case is it's not about them. It's not about Moses either. It's about God's glory. And that's what they missed in this moment. And you can insert your own phrase there. Can't I also preach that sermon? Can't I also teach that class? Hey, I've got kids, experience with kids. Can't I be the one teaching the kids class? That you don't hear too often. Usually we're scrambling to fill kids class teachers. That's a plug for those of you who want to teach kids classes. We need you. You could insert whatever phrase you want in there. Right? It still reads the same way, and the lesson is still the same. And you make the same mistake, I make the same mistake that Aaron and Miriam made. The second example that I want to look at is in 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter. And that's an example, I think, that David gives us. You might recognize 1 Samuel 17 as that chapter where we read of David and Goliath. 1 Samuel, the 17th chapter. Israel here is at battle with the Philistine army. And the Philistine army has put forth a champion. They call him a man, but he was more of a beast than a man. I mean, he was an incredible guy. I understand he was taller than even me, and perhaps more fearsome. Most surely more fearsome. We'll start just reading in verse 24. Of 1 Samuel 17, 24. All the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him, and they were much afraid. This is, the man in this case is Goliath. And all the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who will surely who has come up? Surely he has come to defy Israel. And the king will enrich the man who kills him with great riches, and will give him his daughter, and make his father's house free in Israel." So this is the challenge that we're very familiar with, that that Goliath comes out and the Philistine army issues. Verse 26, and David said to the men who stood by him. Now, here we should comment that what in the world is David doing here, right? Because David at this point is still a boy, or a youth at least, and his brothers are all part of the army that's fighting, and he has actually come to take provisions, but really to bring home news to the father about how things are going and how his sons fare on this battlefield. So David is a boy at this point. Verse 26, and David said to the men who stood by him, what shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? That is one of my favorite verses. That's the first thing we read David saying. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? Now, can you picture this, how almost hysterical it is that we have battle-hardened men, right, in gear and armor who take one look at this guy and turn tail and run, and we have a young boy who is ready to lay down his life to face this champion. I think that what we learn here is that what David really understood is that he understood it wasn't about him. It wasn't about the person that went into battle. It wasn't about how talented he was or how much armor he had. David doesn't volunteer for this because he says, you know what, guys? They're never going to see it coming. You send out a boy, and I've been practicing with my sling, and I'm really good, and I really think I can take him. He doesn't talk like that at all because he understands it's not about the man that goes out there. It's that somebody goes out there, right, and that God be glorified. And I think that's a really powerful example to us. That if we kind of wonder how was David able to do that, he realized it was bigger than him. I think we can also gain some insight by looking at what he says. What is David concerned about? David's concerned about God's things. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt the armies of the living God? He's concerned about God and God's armies. And I think that whenever we find ourselves in moments where we're thinking too much on ourselves, whenever we're being too self-focused, what we need to start asking ourselves is, how concerned are we really for God's things? How concerned are we really for God's church? Right? How concerned are we? How much do we really take that into consideration? The members that are here, God's people, God's creation. I think whenever we have those moments where we're too self-focused, we need to really think about God's things, about serving and protecting Him, to think about other people and not so much of ourselves. And I think if we can do that, we can come and stand to have the kind of courage that David had, who understood it's not about me. Well, finally, I'd like to read another example in Philippians, the first chapter. And the example here is the example of the Apostle Paul. And we'll be looking in the first chapter of Philippians. This letter is written at a time when Paul finds himself in prison. And this is later on in his ministry. He's traveled around a great deal. And we find in prison that he writes several letters, and this being one of them to the Philippian church. And among other things, we find that Paul is wanting to dispel any fears that they may have about, you know, how he's doing. Because being in prison, of course, is a trying thing. And so in verse 12, we'll pick up reading. Paul writes to the Philippian church, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it's become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And so right off the bat, we see a very beautiful attitude that Paul realizes, hey, this is more than me. This really isn't about me. It isn't about something I've done or, yeah, something bad is going to happen to me, or it's not about the things that I've suffered or endured. Really, I'm here because of Christ. So right off the bat, we see Paul's attitude is that. And verse 14, and most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. And so Paul can actually see through his circumstances and stop thinking about himself so much, and he realizes that, you know what, this has really been a very good thing. And we don't know the exact situation, but perhaps, you know, that Paul has been in prison, has preached even in prison, has talked to the imperial guards, makes the Christians that are there feel more comfortable talking and proclaiming the word, because maybe there's somebody up higher that will defend them, or that at least understands the way a little bit better. And so Paul sees this as a real product, a real good thing that's happened. And I think that's one way that we can learn from Paul, an example of how he understood it wasn't about him. But he goes on in verse 15. Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry. Now, what a terrible reason to preach Christ. Envy and rivalry is the reason that they were preaching Christ. Let's continue. But others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing I'm put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of rivalry, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. So for whatever reason, we see that there were some people who were going out, they were preaching Christ, but they were doing it out of envy, out of who knows if maybe it was kind of like, how big of a deal could you be? So Paul's out, and you know, Paul has his own following, and then there's other people out there. They're trying to preach to more people because they want to be better known, or they want to outdo Paul in his preaching. Maybe. I'm just throwing things out there of what could be the circumstance here. How could it be that somebody can do it? And he says even they're not even sincere, right? They're not even preaching Christ because they care about Christ and the message. They're preaching it maybe to cause me pain or cause me suffering because I'm powerless to do anything about it. So what does Paul feel about that? He writes in verse 18, what then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. And I thought a lot about this verse, particularly in the last few weeks. What kind of attitude that means? What it means is that there were really people out there preaching Christ who were really doing it, what we would say, the wrong way, for the wrong reasons. Right? And Paul actually looks at that, and he could be disturbed by that. I'm sure he was disturbed by that, clearly. It bothered him. But Paul could actually look through that and realize, you know, even though this is a personal attack on me, I see that God's will is done and Christ is proclaimed. And in that piece of it, I'm going to glory. And I think maybe that's something we could learn something about. Because let me tell you that the religious world is huge out there. Christianity is huge. There are so many people out there professing to be Christians in one way or another. I mean, that might be on the decline, but the fact is that it's still a very, very large group. And I think that most of them do so in such a way that we wouldn't agree with. We don't think that they do that the right way. And the extent to which they flat out don't teach the truth about God, the truth about Jesus, the truth about baptism, the truth about the church, then definitely we need to have those discussions. But maybe we need to take something from Paul's attitude as well about at least Christ is preached. And I can think of this month you are going to hear more about Jesus than you will any other month of the year, or this coming month. It's already December for me. This coming month, you're going to hear more about Jesus than you will any other time of the year. And, you know, we might insert our own opinions and feel that we really need to inform people about the truth. It's kind of like on the internet when someone's wrong. Oh no, somebody's wrong on the internet. We have to correct them. Maybe we need to take a lesson from Paul and glory that at least Christ is being proclaimed in some way or another. That's just something to think about in that way. But Paul even continues further from there. The end of verse 18, yes, and I will rejoice, for I know that through your prayers and the help of the Spirit of Jesus Christ, this will turn out for my deliverance. And it is my eager expectation and hope that I will not be at all ashamed, but that with full courage, now as always, Christ will be honored in my body, whether by my life or by my death. There is a statement from a man who understands very literally that it is not about him. And every second of every ounce of his being while he's living is for Christ. And I don't have a problem admitting to you that I am not there. But Paul is there. And I think we need to work to be there. Look what else he says. Verse 21, the very famous verse, "For to me to live is Christ, to die is gain." We read about David. David's willing to lay down his life for God, right? To die for God. But Paul has dedicated his life. Everything was for Christ. Verse 22, "If I am to live in the flesh, that means fruitful labor for me. Yet, which I shall choose, I shall not tell. I am hard pressed between the two. My desire is to depart and be with Christ, for that is far better. But to remain in the flesh is more necessary on your account. Convinced of this, I know that I will remain and continue with you for your progress and joy in the faith, so that in me you may have ample cause to glory in Christ Jesus because of my coming to you again." We read very powerful image. Paul's like, you know what? If it were about me, if this was about me, then it would be better to die. And I'm not there either. I've heard my grandparents, as they got older in life and closer to dying, make those kinds of statements. I'm ready. I'm ready to go. I'm ready to move on. And I do not relate to that. Paul is not an old man, and he has gotten to that point where he's ready. And he realizes that this isn't about him. It will go on without him. But while he's here, he's dedicating himself wholly to those brethren, to those Christians. Brethren, that's the lesson that I wanted to present this morning. And really, the question I think for this morning is, why do you do the things that you do? Why do you teach the things that you teach? Why do you say the things that you say? Why are you here? What is your motivation? If it's not for God's glory, then we're wrong. If we're here for any other reason than to glorify God, that's not right. And it can be very difficult at times to know what your real motivation is. Sometimes you really need a David and Goliath-like moment, and you start to realize, oh, I really don't have pure motives in what I'm doing. Sometimes it takes a moment like that. Sometimes it takes a good friend. Sometimes it's a word in a sermon that makes you realize really where you stand, which is why we're here, and we're here to help everyone. So we always make an invitation to those who might not be Christians or those who need the prayers of the church. We want to do that at this time. And notice that that's not something that we just say. We really are inviting you that if you need the prayers and need to talk about things, we really want to share in those things with you and help you as we can. So if you have any need, we invite you to make those needs known now while we stand and while we sing.
Change the number 449.